What's good? I am back. One and only Paul Masson, live from Vietnam. Normally I go live on Fridays, 7 p.m. Eastern time, but I've started to go live on Thursdays as well, just to have an extra day for people to review. Oh, damn, I had that on repeat. So we got a guest coming on here soon. We're waiting on the guest. I sent him a text. Hopefully he can figure out the link and whatnot. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Don't look like my Instagram is I'm not seeing nothing on the Instagram. That's weird. Does not look like the Instagram is actually streaming properly. Does not at all. Probably about to end that in a second. So I got a bunch of interviews coming up. Just to keep y'all informed of what's going on. I might have to redo this Instagram. It definitely does not look like it's streaming right. So we're going to end that out. And we'll just restream it on Instagram later. So we got an interview coming up soon. We got Jay Fliz on June 13th. We got Lord Digga on June 12th. He used to be down with Master Ace. We got Michael Myers on June 27th. And we got a female rapper, Pretty P. But we're going to be rescheduling that because they got booked for a show on that date. So they got to pick a new date. And we still got Swayzak of the Goats coming on as well. Yeah, so it looks like they were having trouble on Instagram. Let's see what's up. Hold on. Let's give him a little bit of time to come in. Also, I got some interviews on the Paul Pickett podcast. Tomorrow we got Stephen Tomahawk Townsend. That'd be 6 p.m. Eastern time. And we got June 8th, which is Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. We got Francesco Ritchie as well. All right, so here's our guest. We about to go ahead and bring him on. He actually used to be part of an R&B group back in the days. Some of you cats might heard of For Sure was the group. He also is the guy who discovered Dina Howard and produced for Dina Howard. He's also one third of Dizzle Brand owners, and he's actually dabbled into the movie business as well and spent decades in the music industry. Let's bring on up. Oh, we just lost him. Let's see if he comes back on. Damn, it's looked like he popped out. Up, oh, there we go. All right, let's bring him on. One and only, Livio Harris. Livio, what's
up,
good?
What's up? What's the deal?
How you feeling out there? What's the weather like?
Oh man, sunny and sunny. You know, can't complain, man. Can't complain.
You know, very, sunny. We got number rain over here.
Oh wow, sorry to hear that. Yeah, it's like 80 some degrees. You know how it goes.
Chilling out here. So you know, I've been doing my research. I like to do research on, and you know, there's a lot of stuff. So I don't know if we're gonna be able to get to it all, because I do want to get to some Dizzle stuff. Some things with the movies with your cousin and whatnot, but let's start here. For Sure, that group. So how did y'all end up forming that group?
Well, actually, so I'm from Kansas City, and you know, most of the members, well, Damon Thomas, who's part of the Underdogs now, and my other guy Bud Ford, we all from Kansas City. So I came here first from Kansas City '89, and then I brought them out. And we hooked up with our management, which was Kurt Woodley at the time, and Charlie Davis. They were with Uptown Records. So they got us a deal immediately with Andre Harrell, Uptown. The group kind of had already formed. We were like producers and songwriters in our own rights. So when we came together, we was following the guy and the guy trend, and we like, yo, we want to be like that. So formed the group, got the deal very quickly, actually, on Uptown. And Uptown back then was the, you know, Rock Nation Bad Boy today. You know, they had Father MC, Jodeci, Mary, Guy, you know, I'll Be Sure. So it was the premier label to be on. So we were blessed to be on that.
And y'all's manager, Kurt Woodley, he's the guy that discovered Mary J, right?
Yeah, he managed Mary J. Blige. He managed, discovered her and Jeff Red. Went on to discover Alicia Keys. He was VP of A&R at Uptown, who kind of talked Puff, you know, pretty much got him his job back then. But yeah, so Kurt Willie's the inspiration to me, and still to this day we talk. It's like just like my dad. It's like my mentor.
And how'd you meet Kurt?
Kurt, actually, Damon Thomas's mom, believe it or not, worked at General Motors, and so she met this guy Reggie Johnson that worked there as well, and he was partnered with Kurt and this other guy Charlie Davis. So they had formed a management company. So basically, it was more like General Motors workers talking together. My son has a group, and the rest is history.
Now, I seen you did some background vocals on a gangsta rap group, HWA. I guess that was Hoes With Attitude.
Wow, you digging in the crates, huh? Yeah, Hoes With Attitude back when it was NWA, and then all of a sudden there's these girls out of Chicago, real sexy girls out of Chicago called Hoes With Attitude. So, you know, I was part of it. We produced some records with them, and then we got background vocals on it as well.
That's crazy. Yeah. And then, so there was something about this remix y'all did with Jeff Red's Love High single, and it was a radio version. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Jeff Red was a label mate at the time, who's still doing it to this day, and he had a big, big record called You Called and Told Me. That's still one of the classics, but he was a label mate. They had the record, which was already popping, and they, like, you know, Damon, who was real prolific with the music side, and they were like, well, for sure, there's a new group on the label. They produce this as well. Let's give them a shot at doing a remix. And so we got lucky enough to do that remix that still plays to this day, actually. It's crazy, like 35 years later.
I'm actually not familiar with Jeff Red. Like, when was he out? Like the early
80s? Yeah, 91. Yeah, 91.
Okay, 91.
Yeah. He's a good R&B guy. He was definitely at the forefront. Most New Yorkers definitely know him, but Jeff Red, yeah, he was a thing. He was a thing. And then 35 years later, he's still doing it.
So as a group, y'all's debut album, what was it called? We Can Swing It. It was released 1993, distributed by Sony Music. You had a couple singles, Innocent Girl and Try and Find a Way. They both made a presence on Billboard. You had 115 and 122. Well, like, what was the feeling like at that time?
Yeah, it was popping back then. That was the era of the guy groups. It was for sure. It was Intro. It was, you know, it was those groups in that era. And just to recap, so we were on Uptown MCA first. Okay. At the time, they signed Jodeci, and then they signed us like a week later. So Andre,
y'all signed a week after Jodeci?
Yeah, a week after Jodeci.
That's
so crazy. Andre's thing was like, I can't have two bad boy type groups, you know, on the label. I got to switch it up. So he had this thing like Mary was his Aretha Franklin. You know, Jodeci was his bad boys of R&B. We like, we want to be bad boys of R&B. So he was trying to put us in some Temptations, some suits and do some Temptations. I'm like, nah, we ain't really feeling that. We want to be bad too, right? So he like, I can't have two of the same. So he kind of left in a good way, you know, it wasn't bad. So Kurt just happened to be lucky enough to move over to Rough House Columbia, which is Criss Cross, Cypress Hill, Fugees. So he brought us over there. Like, hey, man, you know, if Andre feels that he's not going to put your guys out because he got that already, we could move you over to Rough House Records. And that's went over there. That's where the Sony part comes at. Sony Columbia Rough House.
And that's what my next question was, is how did y'all end up on Rough House? So you said Kurt got a job over there, and then he brought y'all through as well.
Yeah, he brought us through. And at that time, it was Criss Cross. It was, you know, Cypress Hill, the Fugees. And so we were the only R&B group over there at the time. So we ended up transitioning to the Sony Columbia.
Well, because I've always heard these stories where, like, you know, part of the problem with artists on the labels is like people leave the labels and now the people they got to go back to bat for them are no longer there. So, I mean, I guess it would be an awkward situation, but it's kind of good that he actually brought y'all over and whatnot and didn't forget it about y'all.
Yeah. And he was managing us at the same time. So he made sure he had our best interest.
Yeah.
I'm the manager. I'm the head of the company, A&R. So I got to make sure these guys hit because I'm a manager. I get to eat also. You know what I'm saying?
So let's get into this one. There's this chick back in the days when I was a little kid that a lot of guys had her poster up on the wall and they fantasized about her and whatnot. And she goes by the name of Adina Howard. So
yes, sir.
Where was it that y'all first seen Adina, and what was it about her that y'all saw that you knew had potential?
Yeah. So in the process of for sure touring, you know, we was touring around the country. And so we did this Arizona Miss Black Phoenix Festival. Miss Black Phoenix Festival pageant. So we performed there, and after that, we was in the lobby signing autographs, and she walked up boldly and was like, you know, you're going to need my autograph one day. And I'm like, what? Who is this girl, right? Yeah. So she starts, I said, sing something. So she wasn't the greatest at the time, but I just love the fact that she was bold and she didn't care. And so I said, so we kind of linked, or I kind of linked with her at that time. And we just built a bond. And so, you know, me and her start, you know, just talking over the phone one day. And she was like, I said, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with her because I got to, you know, keep it simple and write some fly stuff and come up with some fly songs. So I was talking to her one day and she slammed the door in the background. This is a crazy story. Slammed the door in the background and she said, cursing in the back. I said, damn, what's going on? She said, you know, I had to kick this dude out because he couldn't get down. He couldn't do, I like, whoa. She said, whoa. So then the bell went off and it was like R. Kelly's little sister, which is more the street conversations than the sex conversations. Black Madonna, this is my vision, which is the stuff that she wore on stage, like, you know, very kind of half, you know, dressed in. So that was the Madonna side of her, and then the R. Kelly side was more the sex in the street conversation. And that's where Adina was born. And I took it from there. I brought my team on, Doc Little out of Chicago. He was kind of very good into R. Kelly. I was a super R. Kelly fan. So us and, you know, various producers, Carl Rowland, Mo Cuts. So I just put a real team together to kind of come in and mold the sound, and it all worked out, man. And people told me that ain't gonna work. She's too blunt. She's talking about sex, like she's talking like she's a dude, and like the stuff the dude would say to women, she's saying to the dudes. I don't know if that's gonna work because Mary just came out with What's the 411, so like, she needs to be like that. So I almost didn't even do it. I was like, damn, second guess. Maybe I'm tripping. So some told me, man, don't, you know, just do you, right? So I did it, and here we are, 35 years later. Still touring, get probably more tours now than ever. The record's still playing on videos. People have remade this record 1,000 times. And so the vision was there. I executed it. She executed it. And that has created 35 years later, the Sexy Reds, the Lottos, the Cardi B's. So she kind of was one of the first ones to do that in 1992. You know what I'm saying? And now here we are at 2025. And, you know, we're breeding all these, you know, great new generations of what we kind of started.
And Max, I think,
let me back up too.
Go ahead.
Max Goose, and Rose Romaine. They had a label called Mechadon. Uh-huh. They needed artists. I gave them Adina. I decided the manager. They was the label, and the star was born. And so I have to give credit to those guys, along with Sylvia Rome, who was the Elektra Records, who gave them their label, but wasn't going to activate it until they brought her something that was fly. So here's Adina, boom, label activated. Sylvia Rome backed it. Roland Bob backed it. Max Goose and Rose was the owner of Mechadon. They had Michael Speaks, and they came on to do other great artists. So me and Max to this day is like brothers. It's like 35, 32 years later, we're still best friends. And, you know, so I have to give them a lot of credit for that.
And I saw where it says you wrote 90% of the album. Is that true?
I would say probably, 80%.
80%?
And I didn't want to.
Still close.
And I didn't want to do, I was one of those guys, I hate those albums where you have one person, let's say Timbaland, no disrespect, but he did the whole 12 song. I've always wanted to be variety. Like I did eight songs, right? 9 songs. And then the other rest came from other people that out of New York that we didn't even know, other people that was kind of on the come up. And so Doc Little was like my guy. It was like me and him were like Jam and Lewis. So, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, I like it because it's variety. It's diverse. So it's almost like a mixtape. So that's why today I get people calling me saying, man, I just went and bought that album again 30 some years later. Like the record still sounds fresher than ever because it's more like a mixtape mentality versus this Vivio doing the whole album. Or, and then there's another guy, Z-Man, they call him, that actually came in and did a lot of the great records with me as well. So I'm just trying to get props, man. I'm never going to be the guy that's like, Livio did like, that. No.
Yeah, I did it all myself.
No I and team, right? No I and team.
Yeah, Team Dizzle. Team Dizzle. So you co-produced for CC Peniston. What albums was that?
Well, CC Peniston was a good friend of Adina Howard before Adina Howard. So, okay. You know, that was probably one of her, maybe her second album, maybe, and that was probably more of a remix.
Okay.
Versus Purdue. Yeah, it was probably more of a CC Peniston remix. And like I said, Damon Thomas was, you know, I don't know if people are familiar with the Underdogs. Who's not, right? Underdogs is like, you know, R&B kings in the 90s and 2000s. You know, how you going to act like that? Tyrese, Listen, Beyonce, you know, Chris Brown. I mean, they were kings of R&B as far as producers. Harvey Mason Jr., who is now the chairman of the Grammys, believe it or not. And then you have Damon Thomas. They were partners. That did all these mega hits, and then, you know, how it goes, they split off, and then Harvey became this guy over here. Damon just did some Usher records, and they're still doing great things. So Damon was our musical guy for this For Sure sound. And believe it or not, it's crazy. I was scamming through some stuff yesterday, and they had a For Sure album for $37. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Wow.
But it's like, so people are calling us to this day, because that's the kind of record people should go back and call. For Sure, the number Four Sure, but you have to put maybe like For Sure Rough House Records or For Sure Sony. But if you listen to that album to this day, it sounds like a classic. And we're talking about remastering and putting it back out. But people are hitting us from Germany, France. Man, I'll give you $500 for the CD. I love that album, man. I can't find it nowhere. So it's one of those things, man, that is organically still popping in R&B. And, you know, we're going to probably just go back and remaster it and put it out again just because. But, you know, that's the history of For Sure. That's the history of Adina. And then you got Dizzle, obviously. And then, you know, my time at Epic Records with Max Goose, who and Dave McPherson hired me. And Max found, you know, did the B2K. You know, so I was a part of a lot of great eras of genres and eras of the game.
Now, I saw this. It says Harris also became Executive Vice President Creative U.S., for Notting Hill Music Publishing, and managed John B. You managed John B?
No, what it was with that, there's a guy named Oz that was managing John B, and I was kind of assisting Oz. So it was more like people getting mixed up. Like, so I was kind of behind the scenes helping Oz do things. So you could potentially say I was a part of the movement, but Oz, Sachinay was actually the manager at the time.
And John B's last record was pretty good. Like, I did a little bit of playlisting on that, and it was a really nice record.
Yeah. I did do his pub deal at Notting Hill, though. Going and segueing into Notting Hill, I did do his pub deal over there. So now we're going to tap into Notting Hill. That's a good era for me.
So there was this interview you helped me get. This guy named Melvin Riley, Ready for the World. Like, how long do you know Melvin? Like, when did y'all build a relationship?
Melvin, I met him in 90... One, I was doing Adina Howard. I needed a clear sample.
Yeah.
I got introduced to him by this guy that cleared samples for us, Dennis. And Dennis turned us on. So he said, he want to talk to you. You know, he cleared a sample for, you know, damn a little or nothing. But he want to talk to you. So we kind of connected. I said, dude, I'm a fan. You know, I'm a super fan of Ready for the World. And, you know, he used to come. He was in Flint, Michigan still. But he used to come here all the time. We go kick it, party, kick it. We became friends. So Melvin is, you know, to this day, he's putting out great records. I'm helping with that still. Honored to be a consultant for his modern day project from the 80s to now. He's still doing records and, you know, and Ready for the World still touring. So that's my relationship with Melvin. It's like a brother. Shit, what, 91 to now? You know, so 32
years. Yeah, that's a while. That's a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I also see it says you work with Keith Sweat and Maya. Is that true?
Keith Sweat, we did remix.
Okay.
We used to do a lot of remixes back in the day. So we would go take a hit record that was already dope and remix it. And they would give us our credit as producer, you know, on that particular record.
So how would that work? Y'all would go, okay, so you got the hit record, y'all go and remix it and y'all release it?
But they release it, the label.
The label release it.
Yeah. In the 90s, okay. That was the thing. If you notice in the 90s, if anybody put a record out, they would go and get somebody to remix it and make it, try to do better. Like, you know, remixed by Timbaland or remixed by Al B. Short. So they would remix these records and take a record that's already kind of popping, or sometimes the record is doing okay, but it ain't really going where it's supposed to go. Then labels back then were known for saying, we got to get somebody to remix it right now. We got to get Mustard to remix this joint.
And then so Mustard, they go to somebody else and remix it, basically.
Yeah, Mustard would remix it. Whoever, at this point, I would do Mustard, example. Somebody, one of my artists put a record out, like Melvin put a record out, and the record's doing good, but it's not exploding. Let's get a remix real fast to give it a different personality. So I would go get Mustard, take this record and make it into Magic. And then Mustard gonna put his twist on it, and now the record's starting to explode. Sometimes the remix does better than the actual record.
Now you still have the original artist on the remix?
Yeah. And okay. We take their hit and remix the track. It's more remixing the track and making the track something special. Like I said, just imagine taking, you know, Love You Down by Ready for the World and getting Mustard to remix it. And then Mustard put his twist on it. Now it's a whole nother life. And a lot of times records would last back then, was like 90 days. Record lasts and then it starts to trickle off. And they like, do a remix right quick to keep the lifeline going. They'll do a remix, extend it another 2-3 months. So a single would be like 5-6 months lifeline based on the remix helping keeping it going. You know what I'm saying?
Now, did people remix their own records back then like that? Or were they just kind of more outsourcing and going out?
I mean, if you're a dope producer within your own right, yeah, you would remix your own. But a lot of times, it's always who was hot at the time. Like, let's just say, you know, let's just say at that time, you know, maybe Teddy Riley, example, right?
Okay.
Teddy's the hottest thing popping. Anything he put out goes. Let's get Teddy to remix. Teddy would remix it, and he'll put his twist on it. And now everybody, oh, that's the Teddy remix. Oh, shit, Teddy flipped that, made it 30 times better. You know what I'm saying?
And that seems like nowadays that should be like the standard for all really big hit records, is you got to have the remix, man. Like P. Diddy's like the king of remixes, right? P. Diddy's like the king of remixes, ain't he?
Oh, yeah. Bad Boy was crazy. Back in the 90s, they had his whole team, the Hitman. Yeah. They would flip everybody's shit. And you're right. It's a different day, man. It's like back in the day when music mattered. I ain't gonna say it don't matter now, but when music was real, it mattered. You know, people of having fun and being competitive and, you know, who's the hottest artist and how do we keep this hottest artist hot? That it was very, money was being spent, you know, money was being spent. Today is the microwave, you know, hey, we ain't trying to spend a bunch of money, sign him because he got numbers and hope and pray, you know what I'm saying? And then put a few sprinkle of dollars on it and see what happens. That's the era we're in now. How many followers you got? And I hate it. I personally hate it. It's like, who cares how many followers I got? Who cares how many Spotify numbers I got? Because 90% of shit is being bought. If you go to some of the biggest names in the game, they got 200 million views, and you'll find out that probably 100 of it is bots.
Yeah.
Are fake. And the labels are paying for that. So it's like, damn, labels are paying. It's like, they in on it too. So I don't really try to get, I try to go back to the original days of walk in a room, looking like a star. You sing a record a cappella, you play a couple of your jams, and then it's like, who's your lawyer? And now the deal's getting done, and it's done. That's why those artists 30 years later are still here. Beyonce still here. Usher still here. You know, New Edition still here, because there was marketing behind them. They were real true artists. It wasn't a fly by night, wasn't a microwave scenario. And that's why those artists are here for 30, 40 years, like the Motown days, Temptations and all that, 50-year run, you know what I'm saying? But the new stuff, you might be, you know, you got a hit record, it blows up, you might have a couple of albums after that, and then or three, and then it's over. Some people don't even get that far. There was a dude named, I can't remember his name, but he had a record called Roxanne. So like, Roxanne.
I'm glad you brought that dude up. You know what? Roker will tell you, man, I have been on the record of saying, I think that guy was a Milli Vanilli.
I'm telling you that.
I think he was a Milli Vanilli. Like, cause
that's my
That song, his name, I forgot his name. It starts with an A, right? His name starts with like an A or something.
Right,
but
right.
That song was huge as hell on like radio and Spotify. And they didn't drop a music video for like 2 years after the song was big. And when they did, it was just like, anybody can lip sync a video.
And that's my point. My point is the whole TikTok challenges and TikTok. He lucked up and went viral with it. And the crazy part is labels fell into it. They had bidding wars going $4 million, $5 million, $6 million. Sony ended up doing the deal. And that one record came out, and then where's he now? That was 5 years ago. Where's he at now? Like, never heard of him. He probably realized this was a joke to me.
His name is Arizona Zervis. Arizona Zervis.
Yes. It was probably one of those things where it's like, this is a joke, and it took off. And I didn't expect it to take off. It was all a joke to me, and it took off. So now,
and we had to find a face. We had to find a face that fit with the music. And let's throw this guy in there and make him lip sync. I swear, I think this guy, he's Milli Vanilli.
And then think about that. You got a $6 million deal. Everybody's, what's next? And if you ain't really that dude, you'd be like, I was just fucking around and I got lucky. I'm not an artist. I'm just a jokester. I'm an influencer. So now you got to go perform in front of the world every night. That ain't what I do. But you already got the bag. You got the money. You ran into the sunset with the bag. And that's why the labels are now starting to kind of realize that they fucked off billions of dollars or hundreds of millions on this old, you know, fake viral moments. And it's like, yo, you got to go back to the realness and really, you know, get to the bag the right way. Because, and so now there's a very few that's kind of, yo, bring me a dope artist, you know what I'm saying? What's his number? Numbers ain't great, but they're not bad. All right, let's do it. That's when you're going to win. But that whole they got 5 million views. Oh, sign them. And then they come out and the record goes away. And then you spent about, you did a bidding war for 6-7 million. And you think about it, if you do that with 20 artists a year, do the math. It's like $140 million. So,
you know what's funny though?
Huh?
Like TDE, it's funny you said that. Like TDE, right? Look at TDE. TDE doesn't necessarily go off of numbers. They want quality artists. All their artists are pretty good quality artists. I mean, Kendrick, Absol, Schoolboy Q, the dude Rayvon now.
Dolce.
They put out quality artists. If I'm not, SZA, is it SZA TDE too?
Yep, Dolce. Dolce killing them. Killing
them. Yeah, I mean, and all their artists successful, they're probably going to have better longevity. They probably sell out their tours better. But the problem with like hip-hop and R&B, I don't even know what's R&B nowadays. It's hard to even tell. But it all sound the same. It just all sound exactly the same.
Right.
There's nothing new. I ain't heard nothing new recently.
You're right. I mean, you know what's new? And that is dope with R&B. And shout out to my man Sean Barron and Ty Dolla $ign. They got this kid, Leon Thomas, the guy, the Mutt record. It was like a dog, I'm a Mutt. That's different. And it's blowing the hell up. Now, that's something left of the field. Who's going to say, I'm a dog, I'm a Mutt? But the shit is incredibly blowing up. And that's an R&B record. And those guys, but those guys know what they're doing. Ty Dolla $ign's innovator. Sean Barron, been around for years as an A&R. So that they come together and put this Leon Thomas guy together and been behind him for years. He finally got one. And that record won't die, bro. He's going to tour off that record. He's going to make millions of dollars. So that's a different twist with R&B, but you're right. It's only a handful. Back in the 90s, it was like 100 R&B artists at the same time. Like Guy, Jodeci, Livio, you know, for sure. You know, you had Intro, you had, you know, Public Announcement. You had, you know, it was so many. Now it's like you can count on one hand almost. There is a new group, R&B. I want everybody to pay attention. I got to go back to Max Goose again. Max Goose and his team, they got this guy group that they just did. They just did America's Got Talent the other night. And these dudes, when I tell you, they're like a B2K, but to me, you have a lot more substance vocally today. It's bugging me out that I can't think of the name right this second. But these guys is the future. They just did America's Got Talent, and I'll tell you right now, is that America's Got Talent and tore that place down 2 days ago. So they're the, to me, R&B group wise, they're going to change the game. They're going to change the game and bring it back. But I think the 25 and 2026, you're going to start seeing a flux, influx of a bunch of great R&B. I'll tell you the name of the group, man. I got to give you this name of this group, man. This is my favorite group. That's why I'm like bugging. Like, the guys, because they're my favorite group, and it's sad that I got a blank in this interview. But I'll come back to it.
Your screen is froze right now too.
Did it? That's probably because I went out of it for a minute.
Okay, so Dizzle, let's talk about Dizzle. So shouts out to Mike Dizzle, who came up with the formula. And from what Roker told me, you and Roker are the ones that kind of like packaged it and kind of really went forward to make it a real, real plan. Like, what was it about Dizzle that y'all was like, yeah, y'all were willing to bet all y'all, what y'all had on it?
Well, basically with that, we used to go to this spot called the GS Sports Bar. So first time going in there, the bartender was, I was like, what's the drink out here? What's a cool drink? He was like, this drink called Dizzle. So I said, let me try it. And I was like, wow, this is like a sexy Long Island iced tea vibe, right? So let me get one for Chris, one for me. And it got to the point where every day we would go there, 6 days a week, we get a Dizzle, get a Dizzle. Everybody in the room drinking Dizzle. So one night, I drive home. 45-minute ride. I get to my apartment, and I wake up at 11 in the morning, and I'm like, one shoe on, one sock on. I'm like, how did I get home? I don't remember. Did I drive the freeway or the streets? Like, God must have took the wheel and drove me home, right? I get up. Where did I park? I ran outside. The car was still running, double parked in the streets in Hollywood. Like, I had thought I had valet or something. Parked my shit and went in the house. And the car been running all night, keys in ignition. And I'm like, this drink is potent. So we stepped to Mike, like, yo, dude, why don't we bottle this? And he like, y'all can do that? Like, yeah, we figured it out, you know, right at the beginning of COVID. So me and Chris came with the money to get everything going, get the labels going, get the company registered, get all that stuff out the way. And then it became reality. And then Mike at that point was like, oh, this is really real. He said, you know, I'm so used to dealing with, he called it the about to niggas. He was my friend, but about to, I'm about to do this. I'm about to do a movie. I'm about to do, there's a lot of about to guys, right? So he said, I didn't think y'all was going to pull it off because everybody said they could do what they can do. So when he really held that bottle in his hand, he seen me and Chris, with no joke. I'm from Kansas City. I'm St. Louis, but then Kansas City. I give both. But Kansas City, on the back of our license plates, it says Show Me State. So I'm here to show you. Okay. I ain't here to talk. I'm not doing no talking. So we did it, and then we asked Mike, how did you come up with this? So Mike was like, you know, Mike was a big promoter, and he's a celebrity barber to this day, but he did black backyard boogies, and it was like, you know, 200-300 people, all white linen parties. And so one girl was like, I don't drink dark, you know, dude, I don't do light. So Mike got the Gatorade bucket, put, you know, Don Julio and Remy. So he's putting cognac with tequila, and then he got the mango margarita mix, and he's putting all this stuff in there, and people are like, yo, this is pretty good, and I'm faded. So he came up with this concoction 10 years in the backyard boogie. Yeah. Then him and his partner, you know, kicked off the restaurants, now called The District and once called 719, formerly the GS. And they said, let's test it out here. And it became the number one drink at the bar. So 10 years later, so it was like, damn. You know, so me and Chris jumped in. And got with Mike, and we strategized. And it's funny because we're coming up on our 4-year anniversary on Labor Day weekend. So this will be 4 years as Dizzle, most people say, man, you know, black, you know, most liquors only last a year, year and a half. If you can't, you ain't gonna make it a year and a half, and it's over. You can't. And we looking at 4 years now, so we figured it out. It's tough, tough game, man. Expensive game, but a lot of times I've been like, man, I don't know about this. I'm ready to quit. But as we about to quit, something else probably here goes the cans. Now we have Dizzle in a can, yeah. And then we just picked up a couple more cities. And now, like, oh man, do we just let it go like that? You know, we just picked up Georgia, we just picked up Missouri, Kansas City, St. Louis. Like, all right, let's just keep it going. So that's the thing. 4 year anniversary coming up. We have the Dizzle in a bottle, 750, and then we have the cans. Dizzle margarita, Dizzle on the beach, Dizzle red bottom, Dizzle sangria.
Sangria, so now,
yeah. So now we're expanding the brand, and you know how it goes, man. Most people, they, you know, no one's in this game to build a brand and save it, keep it in your pocket. It's build the brand after X amount of years. Budweiser or somebody comes along and says, I want to buy your brand for 20, 30 million or whatever. Some cases, 50 million. Depends on the value of the brand at the time, right? So that's the goal. And then we'll flip that and then we'll do another. Now that we know how this goes, and we went to, I would say, Chris calls it liquor school, because we had a lot of failures and a lot of mistakes and a lot of screw ups, overspending money. And so we figured it out. So now we can do this with our eyes blindfolded. So we will definitely start a new brand fresh and kick it off again and build that up and sell that. Build that up and sell that.
And you know what's crazy? I mean, like, okay, so my name, Paul Masson, that's my original rap name, which is based off of a liquor. When I first drank Dizzle, I instantly realized I've been bamboozled by all these liquor companies my whole life. They were just selling like shit in a bottle. You know, that's why you got to have Henny and Coke, because Henny tastes like shit without Coke. You know, gin and juice. Gin tastes like shit without juice.
Wow.
You know, it's like Dizzle, it's everything's ready to go. Now, the first batch, I ain't gonna lie, was a little strong.
Yeah,
it was, that was that in our first experimental batch was a little strong. Yeah.
Yeah, we experimented. It was too strong. Even for me, I was like, it's too strong. Melvin Riley from Ready for the World, he called me, he said, man, because, you know, he drinks whiskey and bourbons. And so I sent him a bottle and he like, man, what y'all trying to do, bro? Like, if I run out of gas, can I put this shit in my tank? Like, this is too strong, bro. So we had to listen to the people and smoothing it out a little more, put a little more mango. Because, you know, this was tequila, cognac, orange liqueur with mango. So it's more like a sexy mango Long Island iced tea, 80 proof. It gets you where you want to go. And, you know, hangovers for me. I've never had a hangover. But so we had to listen to the people and you and, man, this shit too strong, man. You know, so he's toning it back, smoothing it out. Now everybody loves it as is, and you know, pretty much got it where it's supposed to be.
Now, is there any proof that it's like a aphrodisiac? Because I done heard some stories out of Arkansas. Like, I done heard a story where some chick bought like a scale breaker punch and end up calling up this and thanking him because, like, it saved her marriage because her man was like piping her better or something.
Right. That's the story in Arkansas. And shout out to our guy Lil Rock Obama
and Scalebreaker
Punch, man. They took this brand on their backs with the distributor, obviously Anthony Eckert's, you know, 63 stores, and you know, how we gonna get the stuff out of there. So Lil Rock Obama has a great podcast every Tuesday. So he just, him and then, you know, Scalebreaker just took it on, they put it on their back and helped us out and made this shit crack out there. But what it is a couple of people like, man, I drank that Dizzle, bro. And man, I effed the shit out of my girl. And then, didn't I, baby girl? Yeah, you fucked shit out of me. It's like, whoa, is this real? Right. So then the lady was like, yo, I had to get some myself because my man wasn't really, you know, I gave it to him and we got a great marriage now. Like, it's just, so it's really, that's the thing they say, it gets you in an aphrodisiac moment. And it's like, they call it a Viagra, liquid Viagra. So whatever's too close to your boat, hey, we with it.
Yeah, because I think we're looking at this all wrong. I think we could be saving marriages over here, man, with this Dizzle, yo. We could be saving marriages with Dizzle.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's what I keep hearing. But I'm like, yo, okay, maybe. Hey, I never really drank it for that, but hey, I've had some moments my damn self. So hey, maybe Mike lucked up. You know.
Now, How hard is it, Brandon Dizzle, in these other like markets, into like say like the rock and roll market, the pop market? Because when people think of Dizzle, they the first thing they're gonna run to is thinking of Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, we've got that. Oh, that's Snoop's drink, right? Nah, it's not Snoop's drink. But you gotta keep in mind, E-40, all of the Bay Area is doing that before Snoop. You know, around the same time, Sizzle and Nizzle, and
yeah, for E-40 Shizzle and all that, yeah,
Fizz and this. Fizz, and so Mac Dre, you know, so, but yeah, the word Dizzle sometimes comes off like hood, but for us, we've experienced it, more white people drinking it now than ever. It's crazy. My guy in Indiana, Carl Rose, now got a festival going on out there, and it's like, when I tell you it's called the Redneck Festival, I tell you, it's like Confederate flags everywhere, and they loving it. They drinking it. They loving it. It's like, so white America is really thinking it's cool. Like, oh, this is cool. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, man, we here for everybody. We didn't intend to, I tell Mike all the time, we don't want this to be a hood drink. We don't want this to be a hood strictly for the hood. You know, no, we like MD 2020 and the Wild Irish Road. That's some hood shit. No, we want the world. We want Africa. We want, you know, we want London. We want white America. So, and it's crazy because our distributor in Kansas City, they are, I can say they're scared, but, you know, I'm assuming they're scared to go to the hood. So a lot of the cases in Kansas City are in the outskirts, all the suburban stores, and all in St. Louis, 40 minutes away from the hood. Like, why you got to drive way out there to get a bottle of this? So we now changing that by having a representative, Rocker Patterson, and out there in Kansas City, per se, and then my sister's going to jump on in St. Louis. So what it is they're bringing it to the hood, you know. So now they will deliver, you know. So the hood calls and say, we want three cases. We want, they will deliver. They're not gonna, you know, not deliver because it's about money, right? But they just personally never thought of going to the hood to deliver this or anybody's drink. So now we got these great representatives, Brandocious and people like that, and Rocker, that's putting the word out, and they're getting the hood familiar in the hood liquor stores and the hood bars. So now if a hood bar says, hey, man, I want to get two cases of Dizzle, they're going to definitely deliver. But them personally, they're not designed to deliver, you know, to go and push this in the hood. But we changing that on our own.
Yeah, and, Michael Jordan had a saying back in the days that I thought was just brilliant with, you know, people try to get him to play politics, and he said, hey, yo, Republicans buy shoes too. You know,
right.
If you want to make it for everybody, you can't just like, that's the thing. You can't pick sides and play politics. You just got to make it for everybody. You know what I'm saying? And Dizzle's a cool sounding name. It just really is for a liquor brand.
Yeah. And see, and our status, our attitude from the gate was never, we're going to go to Compton, Long Beach, man. We're going to go hood, go hardcore hood. We like, nah, man, we going for the Ciroc. If you know the Ciroc, Diddy, you know, less whatever he's going through right now, he's still. That's whatever he's going through right now, but still can't take away his greatness. This thing was branding. You know, if you've seen Ciroc, you've seen Beautiful Women, you've seen the parties, you've seen Leonardo DiCaprio, you've seen white America, you've seen white actors, you've seen, you know, you got the beauty. So it was a lifestyle. So it's more of a lifestyle mentality. So we wanted to always be like, let's do that, you know, because, you know, it's known for beautiful people, beautiful women, people partying with you know, with money, or people at the best parties. You know, like, you know, what's the movie that Leonardo DiCaprio played in, and had the lifestyle, every best parties
Wolf,
and all.
For
great
guy.
Wolf was the Wolf? Great Gatsby?
Oh no, the Great Gatsby. Okay, yeah, I thought you were talking about
the urban Great Gatsby. That's what Diddy's thing was. It was Russell Rock. So we always wanted to follow that thing. And of course, we're from the hood. So yeah, obviously we want the hood to endorse us and embrace us. So we want it all. But we still at the same time didn't want it to just be a MD 2020 type of dream, because when you do that, now it's like, well, why is this shit $30 a bottle? It should be like 15, right? So you got to be careful when you say premium liqueur. It's premium. This is not your average, right? So bottle's $30 a bottle. In Kansas City, it's $38 a bottle. So it's like, how do you go $38 a bottle in the hood? The hood people are like, man, For $38, I can go buy MD-2020, a bottle of the beer, you know, I can get a nice bottle of St. Ives, I can get some MD-2020 and a 20 bag of weed, you know, damn near for that. So it's just like, you have to be smart about it. So, you know, but at the same time, when you're trying to sell the brand or when you're trying to build that brand and you know, you want to sell it, you know, they're going to be looking at all that. Is this strictly for the hood? We'll give you $1 million. You know what I'm saying? Is this for everybody? We'll give you $20 million. So it's the difference of branding, how you brand it. Like Uncle Nearest, and, you know, she's figured it out. You know, she went 5 years. It's a $1 billion valuation. Company's worth $1 billion. So if someone wants to buy that from her now, multiple of 10, that's $10 billion. And she ain't trying to sell it anyway. That drink is traditional. The Uncle Nearest, the slave that Jack Daniels made him make the drink. The Jack Daniels, and he was the one behind the Jack Daniels that no one knew until now. So far, we've established that, and now everybody know. And it's the number one whiskey in the world, and it's a $1 billion valuation. So, you know, it's big money in it if you do it right. Even Ciroc was doing $1 billion a year. You know, believe it or not, before all this craziness, he's doing $1 billion a year. It's big business.
So we about to be hitting this hour mark soon. Are you still doing anything with the movies with your cousin?
Absolutely. So again, and it's funny because when people ask me, "What do you do?" You know, I see you at the all white suits all the time for 20 years. What do you do, bro? Who is this dude? What does he do? And a lot of times, I like, you know, should I tell you? You know, you really about to do it? I can't do it tomorrow. Because it's a long story and it's real. That's why I was like, he's bragging. No, I came from Kansas City in '89. Came out here to be a songwriter, turned into a songwriter, a record artist, a producer, a manager, a music publisher with Notting Hill Music, which we'll tap on that, and then a liquor owner and the president of a film company. So I do a lot of things, and I got that from Russell Simmons, believe it or not, and Andre Harrell. Those are, you got to think about it. Def Jam was Def Jam Records, Def Jam Comedy. He financed the Nutty Professor. He had Fat Form Clothing. He did a lot of things. So I get my motivation from that. But to answer your question, with my cousin, her name is Tangie B. Moore. She's out of Atlanta. Incredible writer, producer, and director. In the family, her mother and my mother's sisters, they both passed away of cancer. Brought us closer together. It brought us closer together, and she's phenomenal. She has about 8 movies under her belt. We just finished another one. We're about to sell another one. Movie on BET called Keys to the City. That did great. And, you know, we got a movie with DC Young Fly's first movie ever with Bobby Valentino, Hollywood Hearts. So she directs, writes, produces. So when I left Notting Hill, she said, "What you gonna do? What's your next chapter?" I said, "I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out." She's like, "Come fuck with us, family business." So I came as a VP of the company, and then fast forward, I'm now president of the company. President of the company called New Peak Entertainment. That's New PIQUE Entertainment. And so she directs it, does everything, writes it, does it all. My job as president is to raise the money, bring the California Hollywood talent or whatever talent. I know all these guys. I can pick up the phone and call certain actors and say, "Hey, man, I need you in this movie." And then just kind of help her to pitch it to the networks and pitch it to the movie companies. And so that's my position. We just did a movie called Before I Go, sci-fi thriller. Eliza Kelly, incredible actor. He starred in it. You know, David Banner, which I didn't know. Didn't know David. That dude was a super beast in the acting games. Go Google his movies and television. You'll be like, "What the hell?" And him, the chick from All American, the mother. You know, we had Mary J. Blige's daughter in Power. You know, so it's we're doing these great movies. We're trying to do them reasonable price. And I'm the president of the company, and we're building into our own little Tyler Perry style, you know, concept TV and film. So we're proud of that. And it gives me the opportunity to put, you know, Dizzle in the movie, or, you know, put songs in the movie that are people that I know that got hit records, and but soundtracks come with every movie. And I'm trying to talk to Top Dog, as you said, TDE earlier, to try to do a venture with Top Dog TDE, where we do all of our soundtracks through TDE, and Top has invested in a couple of things with us, and we're about to do some things with him as well. So it's all in the family. But yeah, so film, television, and that was always my plan, to be honest. It was always like, I started with music. Music is kind of in a weird time now.
It is.
And it's not the same game, and people ain't making the money. The stream kind of fucked it up. You know, they're not making the money they used to make in the 90s and 2000s. And so I was blessed to be able to. I always said, anyway, years ago, I said, look, I want to retire in the film and TV game because of, you know, my client, Jonathan McDaniel, was Lil J at the time. He became a super actor, and I was on the set a lot of times watching him. And I'm like, I think I want to do this. So I lucked up with my cousin. So I tell people all the time that I didn't ask for none of this. I came out here to write songs. God took the wheel and said, now you're going to do this. He pushed me in this room, pushed me in that room. Now I'm managing Adina Howard. Now I'm managing actors. Now I'm running a Notting Hill Music Publishing out of the UK and built it from a $0 to $80 million company. You know, signing people like Nelly, Air Force Ones, signing people like Jaquan Tipsy, which is now everybody in the club get tipsy, Shaboozy, signing Beyonce stuff, signing Michael Jackson stuff, signing Chris Brown, signing Usher stuff, signing, you know, J-Lo. So I was blessed to be able to, God pushed me in that room. Then he pushed me, okay, now you're going to go TV and films. And we have a live streaming company called, you know, World Connected that we do. We can do Usher live 200 countries in one night like a pay-per-view fight. So the hat just keeps on growing, and God just keeps opening all these doors that I'm like, oh, man, now I got another one. I'm blessed, man. I can't complain.
And you said something about Dizzle in the movie. Just so y'all know, Dizzle was actually in a movie directed by Barry Williams from my hometown, Vietnam. Go check that out. It's on Tubi. It's called I Made You. Dizzle was actually like the third or fourth star in the movie. I mean, it was all through the movie.
right.
You had Dizzle at the car wash. You had old girl was sitting there drinking Dizzle, getting upset. Then she goes in the car wash and trying to find her boyfriend while she drinking Dizzle, spits Dizzle in old boy's face. Then they show Dizzle hanging out the window. Like, it was definitely something that made her do what she did. You know what I'm saying? She drank a little too much of that shit. She was drinking straight out the bottle. Like, come on, man. Dizzle on ice. Make sure y'all put y'all's Dizzle on ice.
And just so y'all guys know, man, Paul, I appreciate you me even having the opportunity to do this interview with you. But Paul's a big part of Dizzle as well. And also, he's the reason why we got that bottle in that movie. And he does a lot of our stuff that a lot of people don't know. A lot of our marketing and a lot of our, you know, creating social media campaigns. And so he's definitely been in for years from the beginning. And so he's a definite executive within the company of Dizzle Brand and his own shit. He's doing his own podcast. So we all hustling, man. And I appreciate you getting up every day doing Dizzle business and doing this interview with me and you know, doing what you love to do. You know?
Yep. Before we let you go, any shout outs you want to do?
Yeah, man. I mean, I pretty much gave a lot of them already. I know Max Goose. Yeah. I know, you know, Mike Dizzle, Chris Roker, my cousin Sandra B. Moore, you know, Top Dog TDE, you know, you, obviously.
Appreciate it.
You know, Ken Wilson, who's incredible radio. Anybody need a good radio shout campaign? Ken Wilson will get you number one every time. Ken was my radio guy when I was on Rough House Columbia, for sure. We was 1991. Okay. He was part of the team to get our shit at radio, and it's crazy. 2025, he's still the number one guy to get your shit popping at radio. Other than that, I see who else. I gave all the shout outs like Scalebreaker. Look out for Scalebreaker Punch. It's definitely coming back around.
Lil Rock Obama.
Lil Rock Obama got his drink. You know.
And what about King Tech? I like King Tech TV. He does a lot of stuff.
King
for
Tech.
Us,
oh yeah. Think. Shout out to King Tech. He keeps us alive. He keeps us going. The Corner Boy.
He definitely promotes
Corner Dizzle Boy. The Corner Store guys. Everybody, man. All our distributors. James Allnut. Rocker Patterson, I mean, Brandos is a dope artist out of Kansas City that's kind of like our ambassador. He just did a Dizzle commercial with this beautiful girl named Genesis Mariah, who's the next up. So so many people, man. But in the beginning, I say Rosé. I'll say in the beginning, I would have to say Andre Rell, rest in peace, Kurt Whitley, Charlie Davis, you know, those guys been moving into Sylvia Rhone and Running Bob and, you know, Rick Brown's of the world and then moving it into, you know, Notting Hill. Yeah, and then Notting Hill, just a touch real quick. I know we got like 6 minutes. when I had Adina popping, they like, dude, who are you? You writing all these songs. We want to do a pub deal with you. I said, I don't know if I want to do a pub deal yet, but they like, well, you do an administrative deal where they just collect the money for me. I said, I could do that. Well, I still own my shit, right? And then they like, yo, we don't know no one in America. Can you come on board and help us build in America? I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, yeah, let's do it. First person was Will Smith, and then, you know, then come Air Force One's Nelly, and then comes CeeLo Green, Don't You, by the Pussycat Dolls, Outkast, Roses, and then Beyonce, her first album, you know, Michael Jackson. So I just started getting them popping, and then they became one of the most biggest independent publishers to go to in America. And they like, yo, it was all because of you. And think about that. You got zero money coming in. You don't know nobody in America. You meet me. And within a short amount of time, because of my great relationships, Never Burn a Bridge turned into an $80 million company, you know? And so it just got to the point where after signing all these great things, I said, look, I think I need a raise. I think I need, you know, they didn't want to do it. Yeah. I was getting ready to do that. I'm like, what? Okay, I'm out. It's time to do my own thing. And that's when I looked up and started my own catalog company, which I almost forgot. We just did the Rodney Jerkins deal, a part of that, you know, with Harbor View. A couple months ago, and so we're doing a lot of great Tim from Tim and Bob. They don't know John B. They don't know, and I'm still into Tamir. They did all the great hits in the 90s. So I was honored to do his deal with my partner Vincent Cersei and Eric Jackson. At the time, Vincent is now on the board of advisors for Harborview, was the biggest thing going, billions of dollars, and they buying up everything. They did Nelly's deal. They've done Enrique Iglesias. They did James Fontenay, Rodney Jerkins. So at the end of the day, publishing is another great thing. I'm still doing it on my own. I have my own catalog company that gets catalogs, presents it to the money buyers, the buyers. These deals range anywhere from, you know, $1 million up to $400-500 million. It just depends on the value of the catalog. So I'm just blessed to really have, and sometimes I forget some of these hats, to be able to do all this and still be here 35 years later. It's my 35-year anniversary. And still be able to do that and be inspirational to some people, most people. And so, people say, you're a legend, but I'm just living y'all.
Why do you think everybody's all of a sudden selling their catalogs now, though?
Because they're smart. It's like, back in the day, people like...
Nobody wanted to do that back in the days, though.
I don't want to sell it because I want to save it for my kids and my kids' kids. You know, that kind of shit. When Prince died, their families fighting for 8-9 years to figure out who gets what and who was this and who's worthy of that, and it was ugly, and then they end up getting it together. But it was like, man, you know, Smokey Robinson, hey man, I could do this deal, $80 million or whatever, put that money, take some of that and spread it around my kids today, put it in an account that says get that money later. That's a better way of doing it. And, you know, and so, because what usually happens is the people die, and when they die, the people that's left behind don't know what to do with it, they don't know how to do with it. It's a mess. It's just, so it's kind of like, if you got the opportunity to sell it and get your bag, think about The Dream. The Dream did his deal years ago when it first started. And I ain't going to get into how much he got, but people are like, why would he sell his car? He took that money, invested in the Burger Kings and franchises and restaurants that people don't even know. And guess what? After that, he's locked up and ran and fell into Beyonce camp. So he's writing everything for B.
Oh, guess what?
That's a whole new catalog that he can sell 4 or 5 years from now, it may be worth $200 million at that time. So people are selling it because they look at it like, okay, if I sell it today, I could get $100 million, or if I sell it today, I could get $20 million. But if I don't sell it, I'm getting the catalog, let's say $20 million. To get $20 million today, you have to be able to be generating $2 million. So it's a multiple of 10 years from now. So let's say... You're making $2 million consistently over the years, consistently. Then it's worthy of $20 million today. If you want to not do a deal and just keep getting that two and that two and that two, it's going to take you 10 years to get to $20 million. So do you want to get the $20 million today, or you want to wait 10 years and hope that the catalog don't start dipping and depreciating?
And that's what I think it is. I think it's the fact streaming has devalued the music, it's depreciated. You know, it's free already on platforms like Spotify and YouTube. I mean, because even Migos, when Old Boy passed away, right when he passed away, they sold, the label sold a bunch of that catalog, because the Migos ain't never going to be the same again without Takeoff.
Right.
Their stocks.
They did. I think they did was like $200 million. Nelly's was $100 million. You know, so it's big money business. So think about that. I can get $100 million a day. I can invest in properties. I can invest in real estate. I can invest in restaurants. I can do all that shit that's going to make money for me while I go to sleep. Or I can sit here and keep chasing this $1 million a year for 10 years. $1 million a year for 10 years slowly. And then hope that it doesn't depreciate. Now it's down to, it's not worth $1 million. It's not worth 10 million. I mean, 100 million. Now it's only worth 80 million. And it's only 70 million. So he's smart. But even with him, he was smart. He says, $100 million deal. I just want 50 of it now. So I only want to do half. Still own the other half. So he got 50 now. And if he ever go broke, it's hopefully not with 50 million. Hopefully he lasts forever.
Yeah.
But if he ever goes broke, he can go back and grab that other 50. So that was a smart strategic scenario with him. Most people, you know, just sell it all and be done with it.
But that Nelly was actually one of the biggest debut hip hop artists of all time at 10 million sold first album. I mean, he was huge.
Yeah. So think about that. You know, how valuable that is. 10, you know, 20 some years later, 30 years later, you still worth $100 million worth of your catalog is worth $100 million. That's why a lot of people do want to keep their publishing. But when you get to a certain age in life, you'd be like, dude, I'm 60. What the fuck I'm going to do? I might just cash out, give my kids their money now, so they're not fighting over it when I die, and live the rest of my life.
Alright, before we go, let you go, anything else you want to say?
That's it, man. I just want to say to everybody out there listening or whoever, you know, may hear this thing in life, is that you never give up, never take no, man. You know how many doors I got slammed in my face? You know how many no's? You can't do it. It's not going to happen. It's impossible. And I look up and I'm like, God damn, I did that? I really did that. I did that too? I did. So I say, in leaving, whatever is on your head, whatever's in your vision, do it. Even if it sounds crazy, people are going to tell you it sucks, it's crazy. Those are haters. Do you. Do what you believe in, because guess what? It's going to happen. It's just about how dedicated you are. And now you can look back and say, damn, if I would have listened, like with me and Dina, that ain't going to work. She's too freaky. Nobody wants to hear that shit. And I almost didn't do it. And I did it. Guess what? I'm getting in clubs and bars 30-something years later. That's the dude that did Adina. Nobody gives a shit, probably. You know? But it's like, yo, let him in. You know, he discovered Adina. You know, he did. You know, so. And I made a name off of that. So I'm Livio Harris because of the Adina moment. And I was able to take that and do other things. So thank God I was able to not get stuck in one zone. I got stuck in a lot of zones. And my motivation to being a manager is Michael Bivins. Michael Bivins from New Edition. At the time was BBD. He discovered Boys and Men. He discovered Boys and Men. He discovered ABC. He discovered Subway. At the same time while he was still in the group. That let me know I could be in a group and still manage and discover. And that's when Adina came. And so he was a very motivation for me to understand the transition of not just being an artist. You could be an artist. You could be a manager. You could be a producer. You could do it all. So, and then one last shout out, Carlos Bud Ford. Pay attention to that guy, Carlos Bud Ford. He's one of my guys I was in for sure. He moved to Canada, has an album coming out next few weeks. And it's an incredible album. He's still here. I'm proud of that brother to be able to say that we was in a band called Grand Jury Band together, then transitioned to Hollywood for sure, and then transitioned for me, retiring from singing, but he still got it going on after 35 years, 36 years. So shout out to Bud Ford.
That's what's up, man. Well, I appreciate you taking time out. I know you got an appointment coming up here.
Yep.
So
I'm going to let you go. Made it happen. I was kind of figuring it out, juggling, like, how am I going to make this happen? I got to figure this shit out. I can't let Paul down, man. It's like, so we got it done, man.
Well, we should get a lot of good clips, man. A lot of names you shouted out in there, a lot of good clips. So we'll be able to tag some of these people on social media, and hopefully we get some engagement from some of these people.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your day, man, and I'll text you.
Yep, thanks.
All right, peace. Well, there you have it. Another interview in the books. Livio Harris. One third of the Dizzle brand boys. A lot of names in there, man. I mean, you know, if you're a big Adina Howard fan, you know, there possibly wouldn't be Adina Howard without Livio Harris. I mean, he discovered her, produced her. I mean, worked with Keith Sweat, Maya, CeCe Peniston, Melvin Riley, you know, just a lot of names in there, man. A lot of knowledge about the game and the industry, a lot of experience, And, you know, I think that's what the new generation is lacking. They want to be disconnected to, you know, the people that came before them. But you always got to respect the people that came before you. And Kurt Woodley, you know, who managed him and discovered Mary J. Blige. Like, if you're an artist that's being managed by the guy who discovers Mary J. Blige, you got to be doing something right. You got to be doing something right. And shouts out to this guy, like you said, Carlos Bud Ford. Of course, you had Joey Elias, says associate of Jimmy Jam, and Terry Lewis, Perspective Records, and then Damon Thomas also was part of Foreshore. And go check them out. You can go on YouTube and find some music videos and some clips. It's F-O-U-R, Shore. And they got a Wikipedia as well on Google. And before I go, man, I'm going to play a... we'll go quick Dizzle Brand commercial, and then we're going to get back into finishing to let you know what the lineup is and the schedule. Yeah.
That Dizzle ain't no joke, got me addicted, ain't no coke. Let's just have a toast. Anybody want some smoke? Cause it's up, I be Dizzle up. Catch me sipping with my double cup. Can't just have one, you gotta double up. You pour it, gotta watch it bubble up. I ain't gon' lie, I cannot get enough. When Cali said I need another one, gon' have you coming back for more. But go get it while it's hot, 40 sold out in your store. That Dizzle.
That's right. I really mean it. You could Dizzle too. Dizzle is a premium luxury liqueur mixed with agave, tequila, cognac, and orange liquor mango mix. Throw your Dizzle on ice and it's nice. Want to order your very own bottle or bottles? Go to DizzleBrand.com. Click on our locations. I recommend Emilio's Beverage. Must be 21 and over. Shipping and handling is included. Also on that link, there's actual store locations in Kansas, Arkansas, Georgia, and California. And should be coming soon to a city, state near you. All right, let me go to the schedule real quick. So we got, we still got Swayzag of the Goats, June 19th. Pretty P, we got to reschedule that. I got to check the email, see if they got a new date. Jay Fliz, who got a runner-up for Song of the Day in the music reviews a couple weeks ago, June 13th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Lord Digger, June 12th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And Michael Myers as well, June 27th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And he definitely got a dope album. Go check him out. And also Paul Pickett Podcast. We got an interview tomorrow on Paul Pickett Podcast. Go follow me there as well. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere else. That's June 6th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then a Sunday, we got Francesco Richie, June 8th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then just set up today interview with BKFC fighter Robert Armas. That's June 10th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Got a lot of interviews coming up, man. So appreciate y'all tuning in. Remember, live on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. And Instagram apparently didn't stream today, so I had to restream this interview right after on Instagram. And also upload the Rumble. And the audio version goes to Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Deezer, TuneIn, Stitcher, Slacker, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and much, much more. I appreciate y'all tuning in. Peace. And I'm out.